Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. First and foremost, a very happy Thanksgiving to all of our U.S. listeners. I hope you all have a great day watching football, eating turkey, getting together with family and friends. I love American Thanksgiving, so for me, always a fun day. Plus, we have football on TV. That's always enjoyable as well. That being said, we are chatting with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. Now, Eric, look, there's no denying that gold and gold stocks are under pressure. This week, it's been actually a pretty disappointing week for gold investors because gold gave up that 1800 level, the 50-day and 200-day moving average pretty quickly, and now it was really just neutral on the month. That being said, we are still continuing to see broadly a pullback in a lot of the precious metal stocks, especially the juniors. There are still a couple that are bucking the trend and continuing to move higher, but much like the U.S. equity market's breadth in terms of the stocks going up is pretty weak in this sector. Eric, what are you looking for then as we continue in what's been a pretty boring and bad year for precious metal stocks?
Yeah, I mean, this year has been a shit fest, no doubt about that. At least in terms of harvesting, but I mean, in terms of actually buying stuff that you probably have a pretty good harvest on eventually, I think it's been great. I mean, I've been a net buyer all year. I just continue to buy because, like I always say, my job is not to guess where the market is going in the short term or even medium term. My job, as I see it, is to buy something that is undervalued and sell when it is overvalued. And so far, things have, you know, gotten even cheaper, so that just makes me want to buy even more. And yeah, that's basically it. It's super boring. We're in a time where assay labs are still slow. We have tax loss selling, which creates artificial selling pressure, and obviously the ones that typically get hit hard are the ones that are already down the most. So you have a big negative spiral right now, and as soon as I get dry powder, I have stink bids in across, I don't know, 20, 30 companies, something like that, because in my book, diversification right now, it's better looking than ever before, because especially the whole junior segment of the mining sector is like still at rock bottom prices.
Well, Eric, when you're looking at an environment like this where there are so many companies still on sale, how do you narrow it down out of all the choices out there? Because there's so many interesting companies doing good work. There's all different stages of companies. How do you personally narrow down the ones that make it into your portfolio? And how do you separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak?
Well, the only thing we as investors can control is the price we're paying. And as we see these extended declines, the risk reward gets exponentially better, all else equal. So, I mean, right now, for example, I think there are so many no-brainers out there that I'm like throwing darts almost. It feels like that, at least. It's like if valuations across the board were higher, I would put in more work to actually find the, you know, the few that are maybe undervalued or very undervalued. But when so many are so undervalued, I think the risk reward, I mean, even though they might differ from in hundreds of percent in expected value, it's so hard to judge, like, okay, this $8 million market cap junior versus a $6.5 million market cap. I mean, one might have an expected value of, like, I don't know, 300%, and the other one like 180%. Both would be great expected returns, but they also differ like 120%. So my answer to that is, like, I guess I'm a bit more lazy than I typically am because I feel it's so hard to be doing a mistake by overpaying for almost anything right now.
Eric, what's your takeaway, though, from people that would say, look, these stocks have kept going down? You might see a lot of opportunity and you might think stocks are cheap, but this year, broadly, unless you've been in a couple really good names, you've probably lost money in mining stocks. Or unless you've been such a short trader and you've successfully traded the swings, all of those points aside, if you are a buy and hold investor, you've probably gotten hurt in this sector. So then it's hard for these investors to say, you're right, stuff is cheap, I need to be buying now, when unfortunately I've heard it's cheap all year and I've lost money all year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. There are a few stories that have, like, saved my bacon, at least on paper. again, I mean, we always tend to look at the recent past, etc., and try to judge our and evaluate our investing strategy. But I mean, that's still outcome dependent, that you look at like the results on paper and then, okay, this one is up, so I made a good buy. I mean, that's not really how it goes. I mean, SK Mining, for example, is one of my biggest performer by far and makes up a very large percentage of my portfolio right now. And I've just let that run basically because I think it has a very, you know, premium from the, let's say, narrative, etc., which obviously works even though the market is depressed, but you never know beforehand if it's going to have a narrative premium, etc. And I guess I would chalk it down to like I've let every winner run, and they've run farther than I typically, you know, go along for the ride, let's say. I mean, I'm usually one who buys something that's extremely cheap and can get really heavy, and then I might, you know, start scaling out at 50% plus or whatever, you know, take the low-hanging fruit, let's say. Okay, there's no way that this stock is not going to at least go up 50%. I mean, someone could sneeze at it, or the sector can get one breath of fresh air and it will go up. But I have actually let every winner run, and they have run quite well. SK Mining, Labrador Gold, Elora, etc. And that's only been a like a fire and forget or hodl strategy, actually. So it's like I haven't done much in terms of trading all year, but I've simply sat on my hands, and the stores that have worked, they've paid for all the stores that have not worked. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with the year so far. But again, it's like I didn't know that SK was going to hit such good results. So I can't really take credit for like, yes, I knew this was going to happen. I didn't. So, I mean, fast forward 10 years and we'll see, you know, if the merit of that strategy. But I do think it's okay to just sit and wait, because you can be minus 50% for 2 years and then you have a, you know, the sector comes alive and you're up like 200%. I mean, it sucks to sit and see paper losses, but when you think about it, that's a pretty good return.
Yeah, Eric, and sometimes out of a basket of stocks, it only takes a few big winners to recoup the losses from the losers, but also blast to a level that you probably weren't prepared for. But you have to hold on to your winners when they're making a move like that to get those kind of gains and to wash out the losses from the other companies. So it's a good strategy to be diversified, like you were saying. SK Mining's been a good example this year of one that's done well. We talked offline about a couple other companies, though, and one of the ones you had mentioned that you were looking at was Cabral Gold in Brazil. They've been doing some exploration work there for a couple of years. They just had some recent news release out this week where they had some new zones and some new higher grade areas. What are you animated about overall about Cabral Gold, and where do you see the growth potential for the company?
First of all, they have a huge land position, and they're right next to, I think the company is called like G Ventures or something. It's a Lundin Sprott play, something of that ilk, which bought the Tocantinzinho project from Eldorado Gold. And they're going to bring that into production. So that's like the closest neighbor. And obviously it's in Brazil. So, okay, if they're going to bring that online, that's going to hike up the value of any potential satellite deposit. And it's going to de-risk the jurisdiction because people see that the Lundins are in. And Cabral is sitting on this huge land package. They've been drilling like crazy. They probably have like at least, I think, over 500,000 ounces in the shallow head blankets. And they have like 1.5 million ounces in the ground in terms of hard rock. And they've been hitting stuff all over the place. I mean, they're probing around right now. And they have had like a mind-numbingly good drill result, let's say, that really got the market exciting, but I think could be growing for years. I mean, there just seems to be a lot of gold there, and the share price has been trending down. So it's like, would I say that over the last 12 months that the news would have been net positive? Yes, and the share price has gone in the opposite direction. So, I mean, in hindsight, you could have waited and seen all this net positive news come out and bought it for like 50% off. I mean, that you're not even paying for the success they've had over the months, really. So that's the kind of stuff I like about this market. You can pick up good value creation or positive fundamental trends for less than you could before you even knew that there was going to be positive releases. And obviously back then you would have taken the rid of there not being positive news releases. So, I mean, this is a no-brainer market is to sum up in my perspective, because you can not take risk and then just buy after a company has had success.
So, Eric, what's it going to take to turn the Cabral Gold stock around? Because what I'm hearing from you is the drill results are really good. The company's doing the work that you like to see, but it does just keep on moving lower and lower. Recently, at the very end of October, the stock hit a low for the year. So what's going to turn this stock around?
Well, now I suspect that it might have something to do with anticipation of placement. I've seen the same stuff happen in District Metals, for example. I mean, another case of a company adding value, having success, and yet it gets cheaper and cheaper. So, okay, that tells me, okay, it's not, you know, rationality at play here. It's sentiment, tax loss selling, and in these two cases, I think the expectations of a private placement. So when you have already a small amount of buyers and the artificial selling reasons just keeps increasing, of course that's going to weigh on the stock. So I like both of these companies just from the fact that, okay, if you trust the market and look at the share price, you would say, oh, those stories aren't playing out in a way that investors hope. But both have put out net positive news. So it's like, I mean, again, it's like, in my opinion, the junior mining sector is, in the long term, it must be one of the easiest sectors to beat just, you know, by being a contrarian, because this is like brain dead valuations we're seeing across the board. That might be offensive, and I know it's actually hard to beat the market, but I actually think that we, most of the time, we beat ourselves by being impatient, because there are obvious opportunities out there. And if you diversify away the company risk, I mean, I can't see how I could not keep overperforming the index, let's say, because there's so many opportunities.
Hey, Eric, I always appreciate your positive outlook on this stuff, because quite frankly, these stocks, they have trended lower. And even though you could consider what work they're doing a success, most investors do judge the success of their investment on share price. So share price does need to rebound, I think, for investors to be maybe more on board with some of these stories. But let's also move over to another stock, one that I interviewed earlier on this week. I'm a shareholder. It is District Metals. The company is just completed some drilling at the Tom Tebow property in Sweden. The stock actually did okay on the back of those initial results. But again, I think just the weight of the market has also moved it down recently. What's your takeaway from District Metals?
Yeah, like I just stated, I think there's a few factors, negative factors at play here that keeps it artificially cheap. And I actually put out an article on District Metals an hour ago or so. So I think it's, you have the negative overall sector sentiment, lack of buyers and high count in terms of sellers. Then you have the tax loss selling, and I think you had the anticipation of a private placement, which was just announced, so I think we can check that box. And then we have what I suspect is investors being unfamiliar and or not comfortable with Sweden as a mining jurisdiction. There were some news out from northern Sweden about the LKAB, which is like a state-owned mining giant, had problems with some permitting, etc. Because otherwise I can't really explain it, because they have as good of a team as you could hope to find in a junior that's doing what they're trying to do in that very jurisdiction, in the Bergslagen area. They have Rodney Allen, and I met Rodney Allen. He's like one of those genius level guys. I mean, he blew me away. And you have Garrett Ainsworth. He is a serially successful guy. Met him too. Also got a good impression. I mean, they're a tier one junior explorer for sure. I mean, they got the people, they got the projects, they got the jurisdiction. So I have to chalk it down to like there's some market perception and artificial selling pressure from tax loss selling, sentiment overall, anticipation of a placement. Because if you look at the results, etc., they haven't been bad at all. So that's one I like as well. And I've been puzzled by the low share price. That one is more shocking than most juniors I've seen, actually. Because I think it's one of few that has, you know, all boxes ticked, basically.
Well, Eric, there was one other company we had discussed before we started recording. and that was Kingfisher. They did put out their initial maiden drill results. They did find gold, but the market did sell it off hard on that news. It was one of those assay risk days where people that had bought in before the assays came out saw a steep decline. But at this point in the cycle, do you see it as a good opportunity? Because most companies don't go out and make a discovery on their first pass at it anyways. So how are you looking at the setup right now in Kingfisher?
Yeah, I think Kingfisher, the recent events, is a good case study in how lunar exploration works in terms of expectations and price, etc. Because, I mean, it wasn't super cheap before the first drill results. I think it had a market cap of around 35 million, something like that. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, super expensive or super cheap, but relative to some other companies, yes, it looks expensive for a grassroots exploration play. But then again, I mean, they had one of the fattest gold anomalies. So, I mean, the implied value of what they were going to go after is for sure, you know, in the top tier of grassroots targets. So that's got to be reflected, in my opinion. And that obviously, you know, hyped up expectations because the footprint was like the Coffee deposit or even close to the Donling Creek giant deposit. So, I mean, they put out the first holes. Net positive, we know that it's not just a freak anomaly. They hit high-grade gold at good widths in at least one hole, but it wasn't a confirmation that, yes, this is another Donling Creek or whatever. It wasn't like 200 meters of 3 ounces per ton or whatever they drilled up at Donling Creek. So you have one negative and one positive. I would say net positive because at least we know that, yes, there is a gold-bearing high-grade system underneath there. So we know it's not, we know they're going to hit, you know, keep on hitting something at least. So right now, it's, you know, relatively cheap, but we're going into the boring period. And unless the other holes are like really exciting, I can see a quiet period for quite some time. But for a patient investor, I mean, they are for sure going to drill this next season, and they have over 5 million in cash. So for a patient investor, I think you could have a risk-free patience arbitrage just buying around these levels and waiting for the drill hype to get going again, because I do think this will still be one of the more exciting projects come next season.
Patience arbitrage. I've never heard that one before, Eric. That's
trademark.
I guess a new way to look at some of these stocks. It's always interesting chatting with you, Eric. Thanks for taking time on this Thanksgiving down in the U.S. Hopefully, as we transition into December, December will be maybe a bit more of a sustainably good month for the precious metals, but the last few trading days have really, unfortunately, thrown that whole good month of November on its head, and now, again, we're mostly flat. Eric, thanks for your time, buddy. We'll chat again next week.
Thanks, guys, and consider me biased. I don't remember every stock I talk about, but assume I own them and am sponsored, so I have that covered.